5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Workin' Sports Podcast. Of the 107 episodes so far on the Workin' Sports Podcast, I'd say about 80% of the content is steered towards advice to achieve that first entry-level job in the sports industry. Of course, we talk to experts in the field about their careers, but even then, I tend to ask questions like, what are you looking for when you hire new staff? Or how did you get your first job in sports? I'm always leaning into the concept of getting started. Makes sense, since so many of you are in school, recently graduated, or changing careers into sports. But this episode, we're taking a completely different approach. We're talking about management skills. Now, before you turn this off thinking, management? I need an entry-level job before I can start thinking management. Well, you're thinking too short-term, if you believe that. Management skills like leadership, mentoring, training, setting strategy, building culture, these are all things that the earlier you become familiar with and start building your own personal approach to these subjects, the faster you will grow. Imagine this for a second. You're an entry-level employee and you show yourself as a leader. You ask questions about strategy. You help out other team members with their training. These will show your bosses you are management material, that you aren't just clocking in and clocking out, finishing your daily to-do list, and then hiding in the corner somewhere not to be noticed. When I was at CNN Sports Illustrated, my first job in the industry, there were probably about 20 to 30 production assistants hired all at the same time. We were all on a level playing field. Started the same day, had the same early training, and then hit the ground running. But in a short time, we started to differentiate ourselves for various reasons. Some of us took on bigger roles by being ambitious and always saying yes. Some of us displayed natural leadership skills. Some were better than others at time management. All of these people stood out. Then there were others. They would get their daily assignments, goof off for a few hours, and then hustle to get their list done right before we went to air. Or they would do all their assignments really fast, then hide out away from seeking eyes, preferring to remain anonymous than take on a new challenge. Those people didn't grow. The point is, even if you are in a situation where your only focus is getting an internship or a first job, it is still time to start learning more about management, because that is where you are headed. And the more you can prepare for that eventual day, the faster that day will come. So let's talk about today's guest a little, James Bryant, who from this moment forward will be referred to as JB, because that's what he prefers. JB is the manager of inside sales for the Colorado Rapids. He broke into the industry with Sporting KC as a sales associate, and after 2 years, moved to the New York Yankees. For 4 years, he was with the Yankees in premium sales and season ticket retention. And then opportunity came. The Colorado Rapids came calling, recruiting JB to become a manager of the inside sales staff. JB jumped at the chance, and now 2 years later is sharing with us, all of us, some of the incredible things he has learned in his management role. But before we get to JB, a reminder, registration is now open for our Sports Career Accelerator event, which is September 13th and 14th in Atlanta. Executive staff with the Hawks, Falcons, Braves, United, College Football Hall of Fame, and more are going to walk you through their jobs. They're going to answer questions. They're going to teach you what they've learned about the industry. They're going to network and engage. And if that isn't enough, I'm going to be there too. I'll be hanging out with all of you and conducting some live podcasts, interviewing some of the guest speakers, and many of the attendants too, to give a firsthand vibe on all that is happening. It's going to be a blast. Not only that, but we're going to submit your personal resume and professional portfolio to all of the teams, all of the speakers, and try to get you that first opportunity or next opportunity or whatever it is you need to take that next step in your career. So if you want more information on the event or to register, go to workinsports.com/Tremont/Atlanta. All right, let me spell that out for you. That's Tremont as in Tremont Sports. They are our partners in this event, and you spell it T-R-E-M-O-N-T. So again, the link is workinsports.com/Tremont/Atlanta. I will link to it in the episode show notes, but and in our private Facebook group. But registration is now open, and this is going to sell out. So please, get in there, get registered, and let's hang out in Atlanta. Okay, now let's get to JB, Colorado Rapids Manager of Inside Sales. Hey, JB, how's it going today?
Doing well, Brian. Appreciate you having me on the podcast this morning.
Oh, yeah. Very excited to talk to you about all the things going on in your world with the Colorado Rapids and how you got to where you are. You know, really often on this show, we talk about breaking into the sports industry, tips and tricks to get in the door. But I found out about you because of a very interesting article you wrote on LinkedIn about your step up to management and becoming an inside sales manager. And I found your take to be enlightening. So having you on and talking about that next step stuff, I think is really exciting for me. But I want to start a little bit earlier. I want to start at the beginning. You broke into the industry as a sales associate with Sporting KC of the MLS. What led you personally to a career in sports sales? What led you to that path?
Sure. So to give you kind of some context of kind of my background, Brian, so I am born and raised in Kent, England, so about 40 minutes south of London. Dad is a good old London boy. My mother is actually from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Okay, cool.
So I have the dual citizenship because of it. So I moved to the U.S. to go to college at Evelyn University down in North Carolina, where I studied sort of sports management there. And really during my time at Elon, I was focusing on becoming a soccer coach. That's kind of what I thought I was going to do after college. And, you know, with that, I kind of interned with the National Soccer Coaches Association in Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
And then as I continued to talk to my mentors and talk to people sort of within the industry, I really found that coaching was going to be more of a hobby than necessary a full-time career. So I was kind of, I knew I had a passion for business and I had a passion for soccer. And that's kind of what ultimately led me to a passion for driving revenue. And kind of at the time, Sporting KC were kind of doing their brand new sort of image and going into a soccer-specific stadium.
Right.
So very similar to a lot of, I think, young professionals going into an entry-level sales role, not necessarily knowing that this is ultimately what you want to do for the rest of your career, but it turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life, and so thankful to be given the opportunity to kind of continue sort of that career path in sales.
So after working with Sporting KC for a couple of years, you jumped out of MLS and away from your passion and into Major League Baseball with the Yankees. The MLS is no slouch, but the Yankees are a sports machine, like a huge operation, huge organization. How much of a change was it for you going from Sporting KC to the sports mecca in a way in New York City? That's got to be a pretty dramatic change.
Yeah, so I think that for this is specifically, like, there are several differences and there's actually quite a lot of similarities between the two. And so let me kind of go into sort of the differences first. So obviously I think the major difference was the focus on sort of the corporate and the B2B selling. Obviously in the New York market, that is typically sort of where a lot of the clientele that I was working with in New York, that was kind of more on the B2B necessary, kind of the consumer facing. And obviously selling a much higher value product.
Right.
You know, some of the seats that we were selling were going, you know, in the range of anywhere from $1,500 downwards for a seat.
Wow.
Obviously, 81 games versus 17 games.
Right.
One of the things that I always like to joke about when people ask me how it was working in baseball is the great thing about baseball is that you never have that Monday feeling, because quite honestly, you've got no idea, you know, what day it is. sometimes when you're working a 10-game homestand, and you kind of completely forget which day it is. So, and then obviously, I think with the Yankees and the brand as well, the expectation to win, you know, every game and ultimately a World Series every year. And I think a lot of the fan base, you know, really didn't expect anything else apart from winning the World Series.
Yeah.
So that was probably some of the differences. In terms of the similarities, you know, I think this is a really interesting point you make, Brian, because, you know, for my role, you know, I was a sales associate at Sporting KC, and then I moved to the Yankees in a number of different positions. First and foremost as an account executive, and then moving on to a retention sales specialist, and then a premium sales specialist. But what you find is that the process and the sales process actually stays the same.
Okay.
So my objective, you know, when I was at Sporting KC or the Yankees, was to find a value proposition and do a needs analysis on my clients. So I don't think that part necessarily changed. And I think probably the best way to describe that would be like, well, let me ask you, Brian, are you a golfer by chance?
I am. Yep. I have three kids. I have three kids though, so I don't get to golf nearly as much as I want to.
Yeah. So think of it as like playing golf. So like you playing two completely different golf courses, and we all know that golf courses can be completely different to one another.
Yep.
But you're still playing golf.
Yep.
And your swing doesn't necessarily change. Maybe the landscape, maybe the certain things on the golf course that might lead you to doing specific things. But at the end of the day, you're still playing golf.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the great things about what our industry does is, we are not experts in selling soccer. We're just experts in selling professional sports or minor league sports or collegiate sports. We're professionals in selling.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily change, or your process doesn't change regardless of the product that you're selling. So that would probably be, so each team, that you work for certainly has its different challenges that you need to face. Mine actually so happened to be a British guy trying to convince Americans on America's best or America's pastime of baseball.
Right. That's a challenge, I would think.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who scratched their heads when they got a phone call from me introducing myself as their new point of contact, and really sort of had to dive into sort of why I was actually, hired by the Yankees. It certainly wasn't because of my baseball knowledge. It was because of how I was able to sell a product and, like I said, finding a value proposition and needs analysis on that client.
I'll tell you what, though, with selling soccer, as soon as I hear your voice, I'm like, sure, I'll buy a ticket. I'll buy a ticket from you.
Yep.
It works. You mentioned earlier about how you do a needs analysis of understanding your audience. And I think that's one of those things that so many people, when they're thinking about sales, they think about the high pressure or the cold calling or whatever else. But really, these jobs are so much more about understanding your audience, filling their needs, answering their questions, all the different things that go into business and forecasting and projecting and, revenue generation. How much of a challenge and how different was it when you go from an audience of MLS fans versus an audience of Major League Baseball fans? Are their needs a lot different? I know you're saying you're still selling a sports event. You're still selling an experience. But are their needs a great deal different? And did it take you a while to kind of get comfortable with each different audience?
I would say probably, and this is kind of really sort of broad strokes speaking here, Brian, but
yeah.
I think with sort of the B2C or the business, or the consumer, sorry, a lot of the time they're going out for, spending time with their family, maybe their passion for the sport, maybe their enjoyment and getting out into the community and supporting sort of the local teams. It's very different needs analysis and value proposition to maybe a business who's looking at it from a much different sort of perspective. For businesses, it's focusing on, getting that face-to-face time with the people most important to them, whether that be their client, whether it be their clients or even their employees, and doing sort of group outings on that. So I wouldn't say it necessarily changes sport to sport. I just think it just changes based on sort of, why the person is coming out to the ballpark or the court or even to the arena.
Yeah.
I think it's more separated by, is it a business or an organization, and what are they trying to achieve, and what are their objectives to utilizing sports tickets as a business tool? Or is it just a family or individuals who are just kind of passionate about the sport, wanting to spend time with their family, wanting to get their kids involved? So I would say it's more to do with, the type of person, not necessarily what sport you're selling.
Makes perfect sense.
Does that make sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense. So after 3.5 years with the Yankees, you go back to MLS, and now you're in a management role, manager of inside sales for the Colorado Rapids. What was kind of the first thing you realized about being management versus being an individual contributor?
Yeah. So I would say that the skill set you need to become a great manager can be completely different to the skill set of a top sales rep.
Yep.
And that was really, Brian, why kind of I decided to write this article, because I think there are so many characteristics that don't necessarily translate into the management level. You know, if that was the case, then every elite seller would be the best manager. And we all know that's not sort of, you know, true.
Yep.
So, you know, I think you go from this position where, you know, you go from the lone wolf, where you are so focused on sort of you're hitting your own revenue goals and managing your day to day. And then all of a sudden you have this 180 where, you know, your role is now dependent on others to succeed. So I think you've got to, you know, you've got to make sure, and I know we'll get into it a little bit later in the conversation, is, you know, how important that is to understand that now your role is dependent on others to succeed and to give them that platform to succeed as well.
So let's dig into your article, which I'm going to link to in the show notes for all who want to read it, and everybody should. One of the first points you make about that transition to management and what it's like managing a staff is getting to know your team on a personal level isn't important. It's everything. Explain your thought process here. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So let's set the tone on this one. So typically, you know, Brian, and all means not all the time, you know, our sales academy, you know, it's their first job out of college. It's typically minimum wage with maybe commission.
Yep.
Okay, there are sales metrics that attract daily, weekly, monthly. And oh, by the way, it's most likely in the city that you're not, you know, that you're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And some, quite frankly, have never picked up a phone before. You know, and to start sort of the job that they're getting ready to do. So it's scary. You know, it's scary for a young professional to, you know, a lot of is being thrown at him or her. So, you know, what we're doing here at the Academy is we're teaching young professionals so much more about just becoming a sales, you know, man and woman. You know, they obviously want to be heard. They want to be respected. And they want to know that you have their best interests at heart. You know, a lot of these folks, they come not necessarily because of the logo. They come because of the manager that they believe is going to put them in the best position to succeed. So, you know, us as IS managers or inside sales managers, as we say, you know, have to play several roles. You know, whether it be big brother, mentor, maybe the drill sergeant once in a while, you know, or a coach. So actually one of the things that we do at the Rapids is, you know, in every single member of our staff, you know, we actually invite to my house for dinner for a home cooked meal and get to spend time with my team outside of the office. And for them to see their manager, as a husband, and as a family man, I think is really important. And, yeah. And for them to understand that, you know, I was in their shoes, you know, only a few years ago. So I think that was something that I knew was going to be important coming into a management role, but I didn't know if it was going to be everything. You know, I didn't know it was everything. And I find that as soon as you have people buy into you and the program that you're trying to create, it's pretty amazing what happens when you put a bunch of people in that room together.
Do you find that your management style has come from, because I love that idea. I love the human aspect that you're bringing to it and that bond that you're creating with your staff. I think that's super important and great. Did you find that a lot of your decision making as a manager is coming from your own gut instincts and what you would want to see? Or do you feel like, did you have like a mentor that kind of helped you understand the different sides of management and the things you want to do and more of a technical approach to it? How did you kind of get to this point where you knew what to do?
So I was, you know, that actually kind of answers the question, Brian, of like why I am an inside sales manager. So, you know, I was a kid, you know, who had no sales experience, and I went to take on a role at Sporting KC, as we mentioned earlier today. And Greg Allen, who was my manager at the time, he's currently the VP over at Sporting KC, quite frankly, changed my life. And I'd always had an amazing experience as an inside sales rep, and I knew that I wanted to become an inside sales manager specifically because of the experience that I had and the training and onboarding that I received whilst at Sporting KC. So a lot of what I do, you know, certainly is reflective of sort of how I went through inside sales. I think one of the fun things that I get kind of picked on here a little bit in the office is that I do require all of the gentlemen within our academy to be clean shaven. It's something that I was when I first started. Greg was like, right, you got to be clean shaven every day. As you can imagine, here in Denver, where you know beards are,
oh,
are
yeah.
probably you know more seen than not. That was something that has turned into a little bit of a tradition with the males in our academy, and they get to kind of celebrate sort of their promotion by growing out that beard that they once had.
So, oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah, it's so I really just took a lot of the things that I had in my inside sales experience and replicated it because I knew it put me in a position to succeed. And I thought, well, if it made me succeed, then it's my responsibility to make sure I get them the same honest opinions and that platform to succeed as well.
You've referenced a couple times that when new salespeople start, they don't really have a background in sales per se, or they've maybe never picked up a phone before, or they've never made a sales call. I'm really curious about that because you're at the pro level, like you're at the top of the game, and yet you're not getting people that have like a deep sales experience. Does that mean that the schools today, like the sports management programs, et cetera, out there aren't really teaching the kind of vital skills people need to enter the workforce? Because so many jobs are in sales, and yet you're saying you're getting candidates that don't necessarily have sales experience. Is there a disconnect between the schools and the employers at some level?
So I do believe colleges and universities are getting better at this. However, I do think we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
The focus on revenue generating positions, which typically is what really for any organization, there are obviously a lot more positions that hold sort of revenue generating or have a focus on that. And I don't think that's emphasized enough in the traditional sports sales management programs. Now, I'll also add, Brian, that, you know, we don't just recruit from sports management programs as well. You know, we have several individuals, you know, who come from, you know, we've actually just hired a gentleman who, you know, was about to go to law school.
Okay.
We've had people with, you know, economics majors. We've had folks who are communication majors, but you're absolutely right. I think there are some vital skills that I think there are some schools out there that are doing a really nice job of getting a kind of getting exposed to sales more so than they ever have been at the college and university level by doing internships or doing practicums that are tied to maybe some of the local teams. But my pitch to young professionals, you know, when I talk to them about becoming an inside sales rep, is not, hey, you know, hey, Johnny, you know, what are your thoughts about making 100 phone calls a day for the rest of your life? You know, my sort of philosophy and what we teach is sales, presentation skills, and techniques that, and it so happens to be an experience in the form of a ticket to a game. So, you know, we are training on B2B selling, you know, setting meetings with CEOs. I mean, how many young professionals are doing that straight out of college?
Right.
And I think any class or program that can facilitate those types of experiences, I think are ahead of the game. So I do believe that there are a lot of things that an inside sales position can really teach a young professional. And I think it's amazing when you ask a young rep to look back and reflect on their first day to their 6 month kind of time period with us. I think they would look back on that time and think, wow, you know, I've learned a lot about not only how to sell, but I've learned a lot about myself. And I think that's one of the coolest things that we get to offer within the academy.
Definitely. In your article, you state that you should focus on your team buying into your philosophies and culture before teaching sales techniques. Let's lean into that a little bit. Why is it so important to get people to understand and buy into the philosophy and culture? How is that something you prioritize ahead of the sales techniques per se?
Sure. So I'm not sure if you're familiar or let me ask you, Brian, like how familiar are you with sort of Focus 3 and like Brian and Tim Kite?
I am not. So you're going to enlighten me
okay.
as well. Good. I can learn something.
So I'm a huge fan of their work. They that they're a father son sort of company that they have a fantastic podcast. It's called Focus 3. And what basically they sort of speak to athletic programs, schools, businesses about these particular sort of topics of like philosophy, culture. And, you know, one of the things that I love, and I always say this to someone, like, culture only has one job, and it's to drive behavior that wins. So, you know, culture drives results, and then the people drive the culture. So, and our philosophy and strategy are part of that. And so we put a huge premium on having to recruit individuals that understand and want to embrace what we are trying to achieve at the Rapid specifically, from a business standpoint and a revenue standpoint. And there's really no middle ground on that, you know, so it's either you're in or you're out.
I love
that.
And
I think when you are creating a culture, and, you know, I came into the Colorado Rapids, Brian, to really be able to execute that, was to execute a culture of excellence within our inside sales program. So, you know, my conversations that I'm having with our reps is, you know, hey, we need to understand like what our culture is and what we want that to be like. And then here is our philosophies that we stand by, which we describe those as effort, discipline, mental toughness, entrepreneurship, as the four kind of key sort of core philosophies that not only do we look for in reps when trying to recruit them, but also the standard that we want them to come in each and every day with. So I think it's everything. You know, I think you mentioned sort of what's the difference between, you know, organization to organization. You know, every company has its kind of ticks and works a certain way. But I think the most elite cultures are the ones that that obviously drive results. And it's not there to, like, the culture is not there to make people feel good. It's there to drive behavior that wins. And I think that's why we've had so much success in our Inside Sales Academy, is because we just, quite frankly, have just people bought into our program first and understand exactly what is required of them and what we're trying to accomplish. And when you get 10 people in a room who have the same thought process and have exact understanding of what is required of them, it's amazing what happens.
I completely agree. And I think what you're saying is so powerful, because I've worked at enough different corporations to realize, you know, in my first job, I can say, it was so clear. Everyone knew their roles. Everybody knew what was expected of them. Everybody knew what success looked like and how we were being graded and judged and measured. And that was powerful. That allowed everybody to move in unison towards a similar goal. And then I've worked at other companies where it felt like it was a moving target every day, and you never knew what was going to please your boss or how you were going to survive or thrive or whatever it was. So just that transparent mission and vision is so powerful. Go ahead.
Yeah, it really, Brian, like, if you, like, you can have the, you know, the best sales team on the floor, but if you don't have a clear vision and clear expectations, you find yourself spending more time trying to focus on that, when really that time should be spent sort of really helping drive business for your reps. So I can't sort of illustrate how important it is to, when you have everything on the table and it's clear, concise, and it's consistent, and everybody's on the same page, you know, that's where the magic happens.
Totally agree. One of the next points you make, and I like the sequence here, it feels like you're building off of your different management processes and actually going in a logical order. The next thing you mentioned is training your team on sales 101. Don't train them on how you sold. And I will admit, when I first jumped into management, this was one of my biggest struggles. I wanted to teach my staff, you know, my way, but I faced the same issue of giving them enough freedom to be successful and also give them enough structure to comply with objectives. How did you come to this point? How did you get to a point where you realized that I can't teach them to do it my way? I have to teach them the fundamentals.
Right. So, no, you're absolutely right. Obviously, there are millions of different ways to sell. And obviously there are some great sales men and women out there who have very different styles of how they go about being successful in their role. And I think it's naive to think as a manager, that your style and what made you successful is going to work on every single person. One of the things actually we do is, for our entry level reps is we do a personality test. One of my goals is actually trying to decipher, how their personality and what type of selling style can I help them, become.
Okay.
And I think that's sort of really important. And, I think it goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about already, which is, get to know them on a personal level, understand sort of the vital skills, understanding sort of the philosophy and culture that we're trying to create here. But I think it's one of those things which, I was guilty of when I first started in New York, when I was given the opportunity to kind of work with a night sales program. And, one of the managers leading that program kind of told us that was going to be actually the number one thing that we were going to have to overcome, which was, we have to break this down to its simplest forms. Like, we have to understand that things that we take for granted each day, or things that we know, for an entry-level sales rep, that is not something that that they might not know. So we have to break it down bit by bit, piece by piece, to make it into its simplest form for someone to understand, and then for them to interpret it the way that they see fit and to put their own style on it. But I think this is probably the number one thing the question that I get asked from senior account executives who are looking into that management. They say, what's one piece of advice that I would, that you would have? And I would say, make sure that you, when you're training, you're breaking it down to its simplest forms, and do not take anything for granted about that they should know one thing over another. And that just also just comes with time, Brian. But that was certainly a challenge that I had to overcome. And as soon as I did that, I found that we allowed our reps to become more themselves and not necessarily robots and 10 people trying to sell the same way.
It's interesting how all of your points really fit together well too, if you look at them holistically, because once you get to know the personality of your staff and you engage with them on a more human level, you get to learn about how they're going to best go about doing their job as well, and then set them up to succeed in their role by teaching them the fundamentals that help, guide them and steer them or whatever. So it almost feels like, you hear coaches say all the time that my job is to put the people in the right position to succeed. And that's such a big part of management too, is just figuring out your individuals and figuring out where to place them and how to guide them in a way that works for them so that they can be in a position to thrive.
So, absolutely agree with you.
Yep. So one of the final points you make is that management isn't for everyone. And I think I love the raw honesty of that, is that everybody thinks their natural progression is, I'm going to start working, and then I'm going to be a manager, and then I'm going to be a director, and then I'm going to be a VP. And that's just the way things go. But it's true. Yep. Managing people is not for everyone. In your couple years now as a manager, do you think you've found that it is for you? And if yes, why? And if no, I promise I won't tell your boss.
Yeah. I'm sure Jacob's probably going to be listening to this. Good. Jacob, my director of ticket sales here at the Rapids, we actually used to intern together.
Oh, that's cool.
Back in the day. So we actually go way back to my days in Kansas City. So he was actually the one who brought me on. So I'd like to think that he thinks I could manage, but, yeah. I'll confirm it by saying, yes, I do. I think part of that, Brian, was obviously my passion for coaching, people when I was pursuing the career as a soccer coach. And I loved being around people. I loved being around helping people be the best version of themselves. And I had a really cool time, doing that. I think the second part is that I had an amazing experience as an inside sales representative. And as I mentioned, that quite frankly sort of changed my life. So I knew that, someone to have such an impact on me, I thought, how cool would it be if I could have the same impact that I can have on other individuals. You know, so I get up every morning focusing on how I can get my team in a position to succeed at their roles. And I think, my favorite days in the industry have been when we've had our 20 plus reps or so come through our academy to move on to those full-time roles, who have left the Rapids, they've either been promoted within sort of our organization, they've been promoted within Kroenke Sports and Entertainment, or they've been able to get full-time positions within the NFL, the NBA, MLB, or NHL teams. So I think that's actually what we're going to be doing later today, actually, is we're going to be celebrating a few folks on my team who are moving on to those full-time positions. And I think if you get more excited about people's success than your own, I think that's a pretty good sign that this might be the right type of job for you.
So you've been in sports sales for almost a decade now. You've had a management role. You've seen people come and go. You've, I'm sure, been in charge of hiring and firing or letting people go or whatever. How can you tell who will be successful in these inside sales roles? Is there a pattern? Do you notice some people who are likely to succeed and others who are likely to flame out? What is kind of that skill set that you've identified as this is the kind of grouping of skills that make for a really talented salesperson?
So it's a great question. And two things come straight to mind. Passion for selling and mental toughness. So let me kind of break down both of those. So passion for selling, one of the things and one of the biggest pet peeves that I have, and I actually wrote another LinkedIn article about this, which was titled, "Why the phrase foot in the door is the worst thing that you can say in a sports sales interview."
I like that.
The reason why I wrote that article was because, we get so many resumes and so many people wanting to break into this industry that are doing it for the complete wrong reasons. And a lot of people are looking at positions in sports and saying, okay, if I can get my foot into the door, then I can move on to a marketing role, I can move on to a stadium operations role, whatever the case may be. This role as an inside sales rep, it is very, very difficult to do if you're not passionate about what you're doing each and every day. Like, you have to come in each and every day with a great attitude and be able to hit those metrics that are being assigned to you. And it's very difficult to do if you're not actually passionate about selling what you're selling the actual product that you're trying to sell. So I would say passion for selling and passion for learning that craft within our industry is always going to be favorable for people. And it's going to be so easy to see that in just kind of the day-to-day metrics that we keep tabs on to really understand that this is probably not something that they're actually even passionate about. And then the second one is mental toughness, which I think is by far the number one trait that I think separates elite sales professionals to the average and the people who are no longer in those types of roles. So setting the tone here again, we get several resumes that are from candidates in school who have had very successful careers. They've been presidents of organizations, they've had high GPAs, they've done everything under the sun, and their resume looks fantastic. And they've had a very successful career up to this point. And then all of a sudden, what happens is that you get into this role where winning, getting one or two yeses and 99 no's a day is actually a very successful day.
Yep.
And I think it takes a certain individual to be able to get up after being knocked down constantly every single time, maybe going weeks without a sale, or maybe you thought a sale was coming in and it turns out that it's not. This is an absolute grind. It will be one of the toughest roles that you will have in this industry. And I think the people who don't sort of ride this roller coaster and have the mental toughness to understand why they're doing it, and like I said in the questions previously, like, it's not this concept of you're going to make 100 phone calls a day for the rest of your life. No, that metric is in place because it gives you the best opportunity to practice the skill sets of face-to-face meetings and using that skill set that is ultimately going to lead you to a long and successful career down the road. And so some people, I think, just forget that sort of that reason or that why about what they're doing each and every day. And you've got to have that mental toughness and mental capacity to truly make sure that you're coming in every day executing the game plan, because if you're not, you're going to struggle, and that's obviously going to lead to not a very sort of successful career in this industry.
JB, I can't thank you enough. This has been an incredible interview. You've shared so much insight into what it's really like out there, and I love your raw and honest take and your open vulnerability about, you know, how you interact with your staff and how you create who they are and get to know them and build them up. And I just love the insight you've given to people. And I think it's so important that even when you're entry level and just getting started out, you start to almost build your own philosophy on how you will be when you become a manager.
Well, Brian, no, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm a big fan of all the content that sort of you're creating and providing insight to as many people as possible. I really enjoyed the conversation and thanks for having me on.
There were so many things I loved about that interview, but I think one of the major points that stood out was JB's mentor showing him the way towards management. JB learned from his manager how he liked to be treated. And he also picked up different techniques that motivated and inspired him, personalizing the work experience. As an early career employee, JB started to notice what worked and what didn't so that he could utilize these techniques when he became a manager. And that's what you should be doing in listening to this episode and watching how things work around you. I love his instinct to think ahead rather than always be in the moment and day to day. The other thing that tells you is when you become a manager, you have great power. The power to inspire and motivate and help someone else form their foundation in a management style. I've had some great bosses and I picked things up from every one of them. I've also had some terrible bosses and I've learned what not to do from them. Without sounding too cliche or cheesy, there's something to be learned every day. So attack each moment with openness and a willingness to learn and adapt and bring something into your own foundational thoughts about management or how you want to behave on the job. That's it for this week's interview. Thanks so much for listening. And remember to check out and register for our Sports Career Accelerator event coming September 13th and 14th in Atlanta. Can't wait to see you guys there.